Let's call this guy.
What's up?
Are you asleep?
Ah, taking a cat nap.
You're taking a nap?
Yeah. What's up, man?
I wanted to ask you one question. From all the things you've been through, everything you've learned through life, what would be one thing you'd like to tell anybody? As far as like your own quote, your own advice?
I have a few quotes. For work, I tell people, God favors the hardworking. But what I tell young men when I meet them is the biggest regrets I have is not doing something. I never dwell on the regrets of doing something that had a consequence to it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I tell all the youngsters. It's like, dude, go for it.
Right.
Like, you never know. That's basically what I tell them. Like, my biggest regrets are not doing things, not making a decision to do something.
Letting opportunities pass, not taking, you know, opportunities, open right. doors, things like that, yeah.
Cool, man.
I appreciate you, man.
Talk to you later.
All right, brother.
See ya.
Bye. What was I calling about?
I sent in the wrong scope of work, the wrong work that needed to be done for the wrong property. Bro, I deal with hundreds of homes. And I thought it was a repeat from one of our biggest property management companies to do the roof. Because the same name, same first three digits of the address. And I sent it in. I'm like, oh, I didn't even walk it. And then I walked it, and all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, my God, this is a $15,000 job. That guy that I was talking to was my installer. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
His name's Jay. Very good, solid dude. He could run a million-dollar company doing framing for construction.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to do it, so he can be home every day at 5 with his family.
What do you think? When do you think you'll retire? Off topic. We'll get back to that. I'm just curious.
This is something that I've accepted about how life is. Because I've seen many men retire.
Yeah.
And then die within 5 years of their retirement because they do nothing.
Right.
Right. And I've also seen men who have retired and try to keep their day busy, their daily lives busy, with something to do. So I'm not planning to retire. Ever.
Just work.
And figure out how to do work varying delicately. Like, if I do office work after my 60s, I'd rather just do that.
Work, longevity.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to put that number. When will you retire?
Do you want to retire?
I don't know. I've been thinking about it, and I just, I mean, I'm going to rock it till the wheels fall off, man.
It's something that I grasp onto. Like, my cousin's grandpa, he'd been working his whole life in the fields, and he retired 18 months later, his body just gave up.
Yeah.
Just died. Right? This guy survived World War II, storming the beaches of Normandy, like, and working every day for his whole life, just quiet. Right? And he dies from retirement.
That's crazy.
I don't think I'm going to go that route.
Yeah. My dad retired.
What?
A long time ago. get it? He retired and then came out of retirement really quick.
Okay.
Because he got... I think it's because he didn't, and you know what it was? I don't think it was retirement. He needed a reset.
Yeah, sure.
And
is he still doing the imports exports? I remember he said he was going
to
do that.
Yeah, no, that was the retirement time frame when he wanted to do the import exports.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was looking into like LED businesses and things like that. But I know
that was before COVID, bro. So the shipments were fucked.
Yeah. So he kind of saved himself from that one. Imagine investing a lot into that, and then all of a sudden...
And then you're fucked.
Yeah.
Sitting on the ports for 6 months.
And you just
months.
Dumped out whatever you had or whatever the case. Yeah, and that's a gamble, up. Man. What isn't a gamble nowadays, though? That's why when I ask you, I was curious if you ever saw that number. When would it be retired? Like, I can't think. I don't know, man.
A week of me being on my deathbed.
Yeah, that's when I just call quits. Yeah.
I get to, you know, go home.
Yeah. You know when doctors can call it and they tell these people, like, you have X amount of days to live? I think that's my retirement.
That was my dad, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He died of gangrene in 2023. how the fuck does someone die from gangrene? Fried. You know, he's like, ah, fuck it. Yeah. My toes are black. I don't give a fuck. I don't need to go to the fucking hospital. And then until his body's fucked, and then the ambulance comes, and they're like, sir, we can save your leg, but the foot is gone.
Yeah.
But we need to figure out how to save your life right now. And then the doctors are like, your dad, his heart's operating at 20%.
That's
a G. So, yeah, he's like, it's either we try to save you, and you die on the surgery table, most likely, or you just say your goodbyes to everyone. You got 24 hours to live.
I can't imagine having to go through surgery already at that age. It's like you said, just on the surgery table, that's where.
Yeah. My dad's like, I'll die. Just let me die. Make me comfortable. I'll say goodbye to everybody. I flew in that Saturday night, so I got there 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. Sunday and said my goodbye.
Yeah.
I got to see him the next afternoon. And then Monday morning, I got a 3 a.m. text, like, he's gone. And I think now, yeah, like, looking back, it's true what people say. Like, your father's death does change you.
Yeah.
You know?
So you mentioned coming in, you came in with a nice chest, sombrero, you got the crocodile boots.
Yeah. This is how my dad dressed, button up. Right, he dressed to the tens, you know, smelled nice, looked nice.
That's right.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm paying homage to my dad. Like, he always wore a hat. We buried my dad wearing what he always wore. Yeah. It was a white button up shirt with his dark blue jeans and his belt buckle and his boots and his hat, white hat. That's how we buried my dad.
That's ideal though, isn't it?
Right, you want to go in a fucking suit that you never wore in your life.
Yeah, for what? What would you throw in your coffin or your grave? It's like, yeah. I don't know. Share me your pivotal career challenge you've overcame and the lessons you've learned. Something that really stood out for you.
It was actually when I got back into construction, but on construction sales.
Okay.
Because it really taught me the lesson of, like, if I fuck up, I'm paying for it, bro. My first one that I really understood was, I did a half-ass job on this inspection, right? And I called for the work to be done. Customer said okay. It was like $40,000 on a job, and I was gonna make $5,000 off of it, right? Well, I didn't look under a certain area to see if something else needed to be removed. It was a two-layer roof. Well, the labor cost is about $5,000 extra, so they took it out of my commission. I lost $5,000. For making one mistake.
Hard lessons.
Oh, yeah. And I, like, bro, I was already planning to spend it. And luckily, though, I am I'm so good at my job, I just made up for it the next week.
Yeah.
It was a lesson well learned. And it sucks. Like in school, it's like there's no room for error. And if you make an error, like, well, you know, it's like we shame you, or like you get an F and you don't graduate. It's like, no. Here's your objective. Figure it out. Okay, you messed up. All right, do it again.
You also worked. I wanted to ask you about Bitwise.
Bitwise. That's an interesting story.
Yeah, because I remember.
What do you want to know?
Okay, well, so first of all, you asked me, hey, you want to make an app? Remember that?
I do.
You asked me about this app thing, and I don't know. I knew what you pitched as far as it was, like, I don't know if it was booking or if it was. Something with communications with the clients or something, or just a platform, whatever, for tattooing.
Yeah, so I think what I remember, what I recall, was you being able to communicate thoroughly with your customers through pictures and drawings through an app. So you would schedule your appointments.
Mm-hmm.
You'd keep it, because I remember you had a hard time making sure everything was cataloged. So we'd make sure everything was, like, you'd have this calendar, you'd have the drawings of what you're talking about. So that way you and your client would agree, like, that's the drawing, right? Mm-hmm. And if your client wanted to do something different, they could actually draw on the photo, like, I wanted to have this. So it was like an interaction without them actually having to be here.
Right.
But I think it's more pivotal for you, like, old ways, they need to be here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was gonna say that's like the consultation process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but my thoughts were like, all right, them sending you a photo and then you sending them a redraw of it or something different. And then you go back and forth, right? But you can't do that unless your entire business is already switched over to that and yours wasn't, right? You can't just switch over You know, and it's now that I'm like later in life, I realize like there's no way you could have done that.
Yeah.
Like immediately, right? It would have taken 3 years for you to totally consume.
Kind of
And artists still don't even do that. They don't rely on technology other than to scheduling their appointments.
I had
a group of, back to your question though, but I did have a group of very sharp guys. And I went to their school to learn how to be a developer. Turns out I'm actually really good at directing and communicating to customers. This is actually what helped me with like realizing I just need to stick to like sales or actual human communication jobs. When I'm working with these introverted, very highly intelligent guys, right? Some of them have, you know, doctorates, their master's degrees, their bachelor's degrees in other fields, but they wanted to do software development.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of that took, like, they were completely introverted. They did not know how to explain to an ape like myself.
Sure.
How something would work. And I quickly got it, like, okay, I need to take this scope of work for what needs to be done. I need to translate that to the regular person, the customer, of what's gonna happen. Then I gotta take the customer's or client's idea and I gotta translate that to code for my developers to develop, right?
Right?
It needs to do this, this, and that. And we use this, 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 and this, right? And there's big jobs for that. The problem was for me in that field was the politics.
Oh.
Yeah. So I applied for jobs through Bitwise as subsidiaries. Thank God, dude, I didn't go work for them.
Yeah.
And I was happy to see the success of my friends that were there. I was thrilled to see that I'm like, you'd see postings like, oh, they made $500 million, they made $350 million, they did this, they, you know, and it was through Google investors, right? And then I hear all of a sudden they shut their doors.
It went quiet.
They shut their doors.
I was like, when I saw that, I was like, I wonder if Gabe still has ties to this.
And bro, I have friends, I call them a week after, I'm like, I messaged them on social media, I'm like, bro, what happened? Like, bro, we were out of the job, this and that. I'm like, come look in Boise, Idaho, but they'll pay you good money if you're qualified.
For what they're doing.
But those companies want people to come. Look at Elon Musk, dude. Look at Twitter. Like, if you can't come in the office, you're fired.
Yeah.
You just have, oh my God, I have to get up at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
to get out of the office at 10 a.m. Oh, that's, I got to be here for 8 hours a day for 5 days out of the week. This sucks.
Right.
With Bitwise, it actually turned into a Ponzi scheme. Those owners taking money. This is what I theorized.
Yeah.
They took in all this money. They realize that they've expanded beyond their capability, and they're hemorrhaging money. Right. They're losing money. Mm-hmm. So what do? They hide some money for themselves as it's going down. Right. And then I'm hearing from my friends that their 401ks are gone. And if you really look at it for what it's worth, they're making software, they're making websites, right? I don't know the grand scope of work, but stuff like that, it's like I could understand being as big as they wanted to get and do what they wanted to do in areas where it's prevalent, right? Like,
yeah.
But I loved, and everybody loved what they were doing. It was like you take and build up your workforce from the media area that you're in, Central Valley, right?
Yeah.
You got a lot of media income areas. Let's teach these kids, let's teach these people how to code. Let's teach them these six-figure jobs, and let's pay them that, right?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful dream.
Yeah.
But it was, like for me, for example, it was biased. Like once they saw my, I'm theorizing here, once they saw my website and I was gun-toting, you know, and I was like, you know, it was like hunting, and they pride themselves in replying to everyone, whether or not they're going to get the job or not. I didn't get a single fucking reply out of like 5 different jobs that I applied for.
Oh, dang.
It was there. The writing was on the wall. And thank God they did that, because I would have been in the same boat as all my friends.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, dude, I like some of my friends had to move. They had to go somewhere to try to live again. These guys were painting this pretty picture of this Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
and they took everybody's money. You know what I mean? What it really was is they had a great idea.
Yeah.
They were doing really well. And like any, and this is, I did my research. You and I were talking about reading books.
Right.
I read up from this guy who's teaching how to build companies to sell them and why he had to sell them. Because if it gets to a certain point where it's too big for you, you need to subsidize. You need to bring in bigger people to take control. The owners were not letting anybody take control. And it was all in good intention, but
yeah.
Good intention is, what's that saying? The road to hell is paved with good intention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they had all the good intention, bro, but it ended up being like this monster that they, like they, and it, like I feel for the owners and I feel for the people that work there.
Yeah.
Like it just imploded. That's all
when
it did.
When did you leave? You left?
Bro, 2000. Oh, the job I got when I was got into accounting. I was good with coding, with
yeah.
detail. They're like, wow, you've been doing this for a year.
Right.
I'm like, well, yeah, I was trying to learn another skill, but I need to work, and I don't have qualifications of showing people my coding skills.
Yeah. How do you balance professional ambitions with personal fulfillment?
I pretend that my professional vacations or aspirations are personal.
Oh,
so like I haven't taken a vacation in 5, maybe 10 years. Like if I travel somewhere, it's to learn how to make more money or to figure out how to make more money, or it's a business trip. So I'm living with family now. I'm back. I'm keeping tabs on my mom because my dad just recently passed away. So it's like I told you earlier, man. Like, having a father pass away does change you. It really does. I thought it was like, ah, bullshit, and I'm stronger than that. Like,
right.
No, it does.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize it was through my internal things. It was through external. So like my mom, it's going to be a couple of years before she's back to normal.
Yeah.
And someone told me, or my brother recently, he's like, how do you deal with this? We realize like, wow, this stings, this hurts. Regardless of your interaction with your father, whether it's bad, good,
yeah,
medium, whatever,
yeah.
it'll sting. You just have to learn how to live with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like something that I've learned. It's like, how do I deal with heartbreak? How do I deal with this? I just have to let it sink in.
Yeah.
And I have to live with it, learn to live with it. My mom, she's going through her process. She's been with her husband for close to 50 years.
Yeah.
So if I'm around... If I'm around and giving her shit, you know, just jokingly or seriously, like, it keeps her mind off things.
Yeah.
50 years from not being with that same person, right? And then they go before you. I reread Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules to Life, The Antidote to Chaos.
Yeah.
That book changed my life. But I also get into bibliographies that also I get to see other people's perspectives of their life and different choices that I've made. Like, so there's a book called Scars and Stripes by Tim Kennedy, right? That guy had a very eclectic life like me. Like, so he was a Green Beret, but he was also an MMA fighter. And now he's got his businesses with Sheepdog Response.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I like he's actually an entrepreneur, but he's not saying that he's an entrepreneur.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's just telling you about his change and balances of life. And I'm on the road a lot. So I say read, but I do audiobooks.
The real things that other people are facing firsthand, we just hear about them or see them in the news, if you watch it or if you read it, whatever the case. I just feel like, I tell people, like, especially when you go in the Midwest, there's different talk than there is over here. Over there, the business,
for sure.
Business talk over there, especially when you're following like an oil line or whatever the case, everybody just talks about, like, I could tell you oil, it's like $72 a barrel. Like, you know, I can tell you all these things.
Sure.
That are just like, and out here, it's like, hey, did you hear about the new this gun law that passed?
But if I go to a gun store in Missouri, it's hilarious. Or anywhere, really. So
you,
I went to a
Cali ID.
Well, I can't buy a gun.
Yeah.
There, right? So I they asked me like where I'm from, and I tell them from California. And every gun store I went to, whether it's in Idaho or Missouri, they're like, welcome to a free state. You can buy whatever you want as long as you have the ID for this state. What? Really?
Yeah.
It's like, dude, everybody's armed.
Yeah.
Crime rate is low. This is something funny that I learned while I was in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So the downtown area, makes up of like 350,000, 500,000 people. They have the highest murder rate per capita in the United States. Right? Wow. They did at one point.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out, like, well, why is that happening, right? So when I was doing jiu-jitsu in the outer area where I was at, they told me, like, well, dude, it's all, like, if you're not gangbanging, if you're not doing drugs, you don't have anything to worry about. But I also read, like, some dude got gunned down for rob. He's on his fifth liquor store or gas station. And he got gunned down by some random person just buying, like, a, I don't know, like Red Bull or something.
Yeah.
Saw him pull a gun on the cashier, pulled his gun, pop. Didn't get prosecuted. Didn't, nothing happened. He just, like, hey, dude, like,
yeah.
That's just what happens. Everybody's armed. And what I'm seeing a lot now too is the crime is ramping up in certain areas where you got people from out of state moving to these areas, and they think, well, I can get a gun, I'll just go do this. Like, let alone every other person around you has a gun.
Right.
So it keeps everyone in check.
Yeah. CCW, by any chance?
Here, no. I still have my Idaho ID. In those states, it is constitutional carry. So as long as you're over the age to buy a gun, you can carry it on you.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they do encourage CCWs. For me, like, bro, like being in security, like home security alarms, like, I'd have people tell me in Sacramento, I'd have people tell me in, or ask me pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
They're like, what if the person gets past the door and beelines it for me? What if they go towards my room and they're trying to get me? Like, I'm not supposed to tell you, but buy a fucking gun if that's what you're worried about. We are second response,
right?
Someone breaks into your house with alarm on, right? Sets off the alarm. It's going to be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if you're lucky, buy yourself a gun. You know what I mean? Everyone was worried about that during COVID.
You know, I got a government pardon.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it works. By the way, it works. It might get revoked now, but it worked. It worked for me.
When I moved back here, dude, and then I really looked at the laws, I don't have the right to protect myself.
Yeah.
I don't have the right to protect my family.
Yeah.
I just have to take it. And, like, I get it, bro. People are upset. People are pissed. And when I go to these other states, they're like, welcome to a free state. I'm like, when I was a bail agent, I try to help this poor guy out. And that's another thing, too, I want to talk about, like, tattoos in the system.
Yeah.
It's a great way for the police to identify people.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Like, bro, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
They're like, if you have tattoos, like, that's how they identify you without pulling out your ID.
Yeah.
I mean, you got pulled over. Oh,
yeah.
Tattoos.
Yeah.
I actually got pulled over in Sanger because I had my tattoos on my arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, you fit a description. It's like,
what
description?
Really?
Well,
it's like description of everybody else.
Well, I was cool with the cop, and I was telling him, like, dude, I just came from here, and I was doing this. All right, I'm just driving to the store right here, right in front of us. And he pulled me over, so pulled over. What's up?
Yeah.
But,
that's a way people know. I know if they're looking for somebody or, like, probation checks or whatever, or parole check, and they're like, yeah, he has so-and-so tattoos. Does he have a tattoo? Right? And it's like, man, they recognize that before any other feature.
Oh, for sure. Like, I talked to a customer, like, were you the customer with a, I think it was like Tweety Bird tattoo? And I was just like, man, there's no amount of money you can pay me to put a Tweety Bird tattoo on me.
How'd you see that one? No. Imagine. Tattoos in the system.
Dude, I'm not going to get into that story. We're going to cut this conversation out. But
subscribe for $12.99 a month if you want.
Yeah.
That's the after show. That's the after party for Gabriel's.
I want you to cut this part out, so this is the story.
This will be cut.
Yeah, cut right
here. Hey, we just have a new subscriber. There's a subscriber.
Are you fucking kidding?
It's probably from another
Wait, are we live?
No, we're not live.
Okay.
We're probably looking at the other video.
All right, so...
Or you should get, like, the welcome sign to something. Like Van Ness, you know? Like,
oh, my God, bro.
You might as well.
All right. Cut that part out.
All right. We're back.
And we're back.
I have a question about how do you manage the stress and maintain the mental resilience?
I'm a salesman by trade. Like, And salesman, dude, is just talking to people.
Yeah.
It's it's taking someone's worries and stress, and then I got a pilot onto me, and how do I find the solution to this problem?
Right.
But it's also like there's a lot of stress. If I keep it outside of money, this is something that I've learned with work and travels, is like, it's not always about money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And for me, it's like I have to interact with other people. I have to share a story. I'm a storyteller.
Right.
Like this one story I remember, and I actually got it. I bought something. It was 1967. And this guy was on a C-37, whatever those cargo planes.
Yeah, yeah.
He was about to get off the plane to Vietnam for the first time. He was 19 years old, and he was scared out of his gourd. And the guy next to him saw how scared he was. And he's like, I'm going to give you something that's going to remind you of home. And I want you to keep it around, or keep something like it around to remind yourself of home. And it was spearmint.
A little bit of impact just kind of changed.
It shifted for him. You know what I mean? Like, just something that small. And that's something like that stuck with me, because my dad was the same way. He's just like, my dad at his eulogy would always hear about certain families that had a hard time, but they made it as a treat to like have me and Ed's pizza, which is pretty pricey for what it is, like compared to like national chains. Yeah. But he would anonymously pay for their pizza.
Okay.
Yeah. Or buy their food.
A little something.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So
I'm trying to think what mine would be. I don't know what would remind me of this area. Like, because I kind of just carry that, especially on my tattoos. Because if I were to focus on that, I'd say, hey, well, it's what I'm wearing. You know? It's. And then obviously, you look at your cell phone and maybe have whatever your background is, your picture.
I have nothing on my background.
But you know what I mean, though? That could be something like. Like some people use that as a little.
But my tattoos were a reminder. Yeah. Like people would ask me, and I'm like, oh, that's from Omar. That's back home.
Back home.
Like that's home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what it was for me. Like these ended up, all these tattoos meant nothing. They just, I thought they look great. It looks good on me. And I forget, like, oh, my chest is blasted with ink.
Yeah, it is.
And my back too. So I'm like, not that I got pegged. So this is
my back. My back is the, that's the Kempo logo.
So 2020, we were rolling jiu-jitsu,
dude, and
underground,
in
basically.
The peak of COVID, that was our mental yeah, and balance, because I remember that was cool, right? We were underground.
Yeah, bro. We had our underground fight club, basically.
That literally,
but it
was
just a train.
Yeah, I remember, dude. We were in there, and you're the biggest guy there, and I was like.
And I try to be as all I was. So this is when you were talking earlier. Mm-hmm. So I got the book, and the first like two or three chapters, right, which is like white to blue,
mm-hmm.
was just survive, and that changed my jiu-jitsu drastically, bro. And it changed my thought process of destroy, like wrestling, like wrestlers.
Yeah.
I get to use it.
Yeah.
Like some people don't get
right.
to use it, right, because they don't have it. I always remember. From that reading, it's like survive. I'm like, well, that's like life.
Yeah.
Like, I just need to
There's
figure.
A lot of, yeah, parallels.
I need to figure out how to frame survive. I need to, like, this guy is attacking here. I just need to counter survive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then once you get to a certain level, where you're surviving every moment of everything, and now black belts can't even like take you out.
Right.
Right. It's like what's frustrating too is like they are still countering. Right. So
yeah.
I roll. I'm a white belt. Well, the black belt, and he's like waiting for me to attack, and we're just standing still.
What's going on? He's gonna make the first move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I move, it's not fast like I'm jabbing or boxing. It's slow. It's slow. And then we're trying to, like, you know, frame or you know, and it's like it opened up a world to me. It's like, wow, maybe I should just think.
Are you doing anything at all with as far as fitness?
It's been no, dude. Look at
you did,
look at me.
But still, you're doing what? You're doing CrossFit.
I was. So what happened to me? What happened was, so I had a bulging disc. So my first week into Sacramento, I rolled with a black belt that was very frustrated how I was with his white belts.
Because
I too was a white belt with my lineage. Which I shouldn't have been.
Right.
and he got frustrated, got me in this weird arm bar that you only use for advanced belts, and snapped my bicep. And it took me a year to be 100%. And then by the time that happened, I was in Sacramento, I was in Boise, and then when I moved to St. Louis, I rolled with this other crew in St. Louis, just outside of St. Charles. It's on the side of the Missouri River. And very cool dudes. And it was the same. Like, I was not same, but I'd roll with blue belts and tap them out one after the other. Boom. And I'd do very slow.
Yeah.
Very slow. And I told him, like, well, I've been off and on for 15 plus years.
Yeah.
And I haven't stuck with a school long enough to be elevated.
But I've traveled and I've trained and like guests at different gyms, and it was so cool to catch something from every different gym.
Dude, and you do.
It was pretty awesome.
You grasp a lot of different styles, and it's so cool. That's the advantage of traveling too. It's
like, and competing out of different states and fighting with these other
competing
guys.
Competing, I don't like, bro, because it's so tense. Like, I just, like, I did a few competitions, and every time I was done with one match, my forearms were just blown. I'm like, dude, it's just the nerves. You have
after the fights, my favorite thing though was to just sit on the sideline with the fighters, the guy you just went to war with, and just
chop it up.
And then like share things or whatever.
I once went to a jiu-jitsu tournament, and I won the first competition. I lost the last competition due to points, but everyone thought I won. And then I thought I was done, right? I was like two matches.
You're up again.
Yeah. And then I was talking to the locals guys there. They're the coach. I didn't know this. They were the coaches for your favorite gym.
Oh.
And I was just like, dude, I'm just here to have fun. Like, I'm on my way to my buddy's CrossFit competition in California. I forget what it's called, but it was in Stockton. I was like, I just stopped by. But I don't want to miss it. So I'll see you guys later. Like, dude, whoever coached you did it right. I'm like, well, dethrone. Yeah. And then just a combination of rolling with you guys,
Right.
You know, it's like, no, I'm just here to have fun, to learn more about myself. Like, I was too tense at the competition. Well, it turns out I had another bout, but I just didn't want to miss my buddies competing with CrossFit. I have a bulging disc, and then I almost tore my left bicep. I felt a pop in this arm, which I tore this arm, my right arm, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
So I found a doctor who comes up from Mexico that does stem cell therapy.
Really?
And I'm scheduled to meet with him and treat myself next month. He has his PhD here in the United States, but he also was in, I forget which academy or which school in Mexico. So Mexico is one of the leading institutes or areas or state or countries.
Yeah.
For stem cell therapy, like in the United States.
You know they're doing that with the umbilical cords?
That's what he's doing with.
Oh, okay.
So it used to be from the aborted fetus. That's why it was such a big deal in the United States.
Yeah.
So they found out it's actually more potent, more better if you go from the umbilical cord. And I have family and friends who have taken the stem cell therapy, and they have torn meniscus, torn rotator cuffs, right? Bulging disc.
Yeah.
After one, two, or three is the most treatments, it's completely done. It's healed. Wow. It's reattached, tendons, all that. I asked the doctor, right, from Mexico. I was like, hey, why don't you practice that here in the United States? We're like, well, he's like, well, I can, but I got to be on a short list, and it takes years, and the FDA is not approving it other than a certain group.
Yeah.
So I looked up the certain group. It cost me $50,000 for one treatment of one area. This guy's charged like $400 per year. And he was telling me, he's like, think about it. If I'm treating back injuries, bulging disc, a lot of pain, right?
Yeah.
And the doctors here and the pharmaceutical companies here get to dish out all those pain meds, right? Make money off of you every month.
Right.
Right? Why would they give that up as opposed to just treating you one time? Well, I don't know, bro, but it makes sense to me. Like, and if I go to him just a couple of times and I'm done.
Yeah, they don't want to cure you. They want to keep you in that.
Bro, yeah,
you know,
like
I mean,
when I almost
seems like it's like that for a lot of things.
So I was working and I felt a pop and the hyperextended my left elbow, right? And I felt a pop. I'm like, oh, there goes my left elbow. I go to the doctor. I went to the ER in downtown Fresno, and they were like, well, you don't have a fracture, and if you had a fracture, we'd perform surgery.
Dang.
But so far, you look fine. Go to another doctor. She's like, well, there's no tear. There's a partial tear. But, hey, your high blood pressure is pretty high. Let's get you on some medication.
Yeah. Like, are you invested into like Bitcoin and things like that? Do you still have it?
I just use it for the dark web.
Oh.
No.
$12.99 a month. You can get the all exclusive details.
No. Okay. At one point, I purchased, what was it? It was 20 Bitcoin. So this was like 2012, somewhere up there, like 14. And I was dancing around with the idea of Silk Road. Silk Road was the original eBay of drugs, right? And I had to purchase Bitcoin to have on their wallet, on the site's wallet, to try to make some transactions.
Yeah.
And I just did it just to like toy with it.
Yeah.
And I just like, it was like $2 a coin or something. It was like something stupid.
Some low, yeah.
Yeah. And then 10 years later, it's gone up to like $40,000 a coin.
That's, God damn it! It's again, another gamble.
But that's that. I mean, that's karma. Like, I was on there just toying with this shady site, and then I left it, and it's like a reminder, like, hey, dude, like, you could have put that money somewhere else and made money over there. There's a few people, you know, that are like, just hold on to it. It's like that whole AMC...
Oh, yeah.
The GameStop.
Yeah, GameStop.
Right? There's still people to this day that are still holding on, and they're in the negative. It's like, dude, it was a trend.
Yeah.
People, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Just let it go. Tattoo plans,
yeah.
You and I, we're going to figure out how to cover the rest of my body.
Okay.
So, both legs and right arm.
What are your, what's your ideas or direction? What do you want
to do? I have my back tattooed up until like 4 inches above my lower back. So
okay.
We need to extend that to my ass cheeks,
yeah,
like a traditional
like
Japanese
suit.
I was
going to say, that'd be cool.
We got to do my right arm, and I don't want to stick to a specific style, but you do know I love like flash and old school tattoos.
Yeah, I would love to continue the traditional flash. When I was thinking about, have you ever tapped, we just hit certain thresholds with obviously certain places of the body where it's just a lot more sensitive or painful after getting just gnawed at or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think I was tattooing with my old coil machines, wasn't I?
Yeah. Was it louder?
It was a louder one, right?
Yeah. Okay. Like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like, I got this new, like,
so,
you just switched up. I'm like, I tapped once, you tapped twice, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I do have a request, though, for my legs. To make there be a centerpiece on the back of my calves. So that's the focal point.
Okay.
Not the front.
What's
going to
be
back.
The centers?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got to do something like, I would love to commemorate your dad somehow. Do you have a tattoo for him already or no?
I don't. No. So that's one thing
like,
that I didn't want to
like
talk about.
Like you said, he went with the clothes that he wore. It'd be cool to do something of tattoos, a tattoo of something he had, like the boots and a hat kind of thing, or,
that'd be cool.
You know, something that,
Well, like I said, his tattoo that he had. So it was
or the tattoo,
demon.
Yeah, a little demon with the pamper, and then throw his boots on him or something dope. You know,
that'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be sick? Because that's only
be cool.
That's more personalized for like that's his tattoo, but then that's your like tribute to it.
That'll be like a first tattoo that actually has any meaning to that.
First tattoo that means anything.
Yeah, like,
I think
well,
that'd be cool. Let's pin that idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
But yeah, I'm up for whatever. You know me, man. Like
yeah.
I'm not picky as long as it looks nice. It
right.
has,
no, gotcha.
It has like, I like color. I personally am favoring their traditional tattoos with like a flash flavor. So
yeah.
It's like, there's these artists that I follow and it's like, the outline is like your traditional tattoos. The color, as opposed to just being like, what is it? Yellow,
like,
red,
yeah,
and black.
Yeah.
Right. So they're actually, they're coloring in like hula girls.
Yeah.
Right. With some crazy
off
like
the wall
blend
color. Yeah.
And the hula girls with like as though they're all tatted up.
Yeah. Oh
like,
yeah.
You know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean? It's cool to see like the evolution of tattooing, as far as like there's so many avenues for tattooing.
Well,
like,
since
you,
you know, what'd be funny is to do. You've had these 20 careers, right? To do something
yeah.
for either something you've done, not commemorate like that career, but maybe where you've been, you know, like or so like. Do something for like your most memorable moments of travel, right? And then you could say, I got this, the cigar, the, you know, it's like the bottle of whiskey, the,
yeah.
you know, little things that will almost highlight.
Kind of like man's ruins, but it's just
exactly.
my travels.
Yeah.
Yeah,
travels.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty dope.
That's cool.
Yeah. I like that idea.
You see how I like you taking the ideas and you just tell me?
And that's just so, our mind, like, just brainstorming.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Yeah. Do whatever you need to do, and I'll pay the price. Well,
because you understand that I just let this guy take the wheel and you expect the experience to kick in versus your own.
I can't tell Banksy to do something specific and him love it.
Right.
I can't tell Picasso. You have to do it this specific way and make sure it's that way. But if I tell him, like, hey, this is a as long as there's a pineapple, you know, as long as there's a pirate ship, do whatever you want, bro. Yeah. And then they love it. Yeah. Not a lot of people are like that. Right. Yeah, you have. That's a lot of trust for me. It's like, dude, just make it as cool as you think it would look.
A lot of clients that have been returning are the regulars now. They are now they're learning to let me take over. Yeah,
that's.
I'm starting to bring a lot of people are coming around now, and they're saying, "Yeah, you know what? Just do your thing. This is what I want." They'll give me the general idea, and they'll say, "Do your thing."
See, that's where you want to be as an artist, bro. Yeah. Like,
and so that's why. Remember, I mentioned I don't really have the walk-ins now. They're just becoming custom.
Do you think that has anything to do with your social media? Like,
yeah, I think it's a tool of commercial, and it's a tool of opening their mind to imagine a small town that maybe they're used to just seeing a certain kind of tattoo, and then I'm able to. But I've seen this, and I've seen, like, open the world or the gallery.
I love artwork on people, especially if it looks good. Yeah. It's like I never let somebody in their garage touch my skin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And right. I was close because that's how this area is, right? It's like someone with some makeshift freaking tattoo gun.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's like garbage. Like, what do I need? And I'm sure you're thinking, rolling your head, like, how many times do I have to cover that shit up? That's the thing about having my tattoos and doing what I do. I've been into close to 1,000 homes, right? In someone's home.
Yeah.
And once they took a second look at my tattoos, they realized they're not ghetto tattoos. Right. They're not backyard tattoos. This is a lot of money this guy spent on this work.
Right.
So they're like, dude, you have had to spend a lot of money on this. How much money have you spent on your tattoos? I'm like, I don't know. I lost count after like 10,000.
Yeah.
I tell people, I'm like, I've never let some guitar string touch my skin. You know what I mean? Like, I've only gone to professionals, and the most professional I've gone to is Omar.
That's right. I was like, dude, I appreciate that. That's awesome.
So they look for you. Like, I wish I could go to this guy. You know, we're
When you're
like, anywhere. Yeah. So like Sacramento, Idaho, Boise, Idaho. Because you have been international. You've been national. You've gone different places. You've gone to get little pieces of everyone from it, right?
Yep.
Like jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's one thing that I think you should count your blessings on, is having that ability to go and pick a little something of everything. What is the saying? Jack of all trades, master of none, but better than someone who just masters one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if you were to get into a competition now, like, you can do old school, you can do flash, you can do realistic, you know, and it's good.
Yeah, I'm grateful to have dabbled in all these different areas and categories.
Like, it's rare that you have a tattoo artist that can do everything across the board, and that has integrity. Like, I was trying to go to you as often as I could too. I told you, hey, we got to do this, and then I moved to Sacramento. And now that I'm back, and it's like, I got a feel for other places. Like, it would be nice to live in another state other than California, but I have too much family here, dude. The whole family's there. There's like 20-something people there. And I'm smiling, I'm laughing, we're all having drinks. My Tio Pepe walks across me, he sees me smiling, he turns around, he's like, hey, see what you would have missed? Like, God damn it.
The little things, that's like, hey, the spearmint. You know what I mean? That little impact.
It's the smells.
Yeah.
It's the noises being back home. Like, when we started this podcast, you hear the fire trucks, you hear the ambulance. When I was in Idaho, I smelled. It was very clear. It was like steak. It was fish, or something of that effect. And then when I get here, when I St. Louis too, like, you get different smells. When I get here, and I'm on a roof, and I smell carne asada. I think, like, you and I, as traveling as much as we have, or I'm sure you've traveled much more than me, like, you get to appreciate this more. Like, why wouldn't you have come back? Right. You know what I mean? Dude, I haven't seen your boys since they're little. How old are they now?
10 and 11.
They're teenagers now.
That's why I said, man, this last Valentine's Day, I made it a pact to, like, let's show these boys, like, about treating the ladies that we love.
Dude, that's awesome. I commend you for that, dude. Yeah. It's like,
Back to the whole, like, part of being a man and the father. Like, I'm trying to tell them the same, and I want them to one day also have these memories to be like you just said, like this.
It's the little things that our fathers did for us, dude, that stick to us. Yeah. You know
that,
what I mean?
That really hits heavy for me, and I'm like, that's why I kind of had to go from a whole different perspective, especially with two daughters. And being a girl dad is a whole different thing too.
Well, Gabe's gonna come over to field strip his AR, bro. Like, what's up, fool?
we're just chilling, you know?
Yeah, we're just
cleaning. It's like the
just cleaning my 40 cal, my 50 cal. Yeah, yeah.
I just made it a pact to have that really project that to them and show them, instill it into their good. Minds, you know, because it's like, and then show how she should be treated.
I feel like the old ways, like I told you earlier, it's
reverting back to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I don't have any children.
Right.
But that's how my dad he instilled in us, bro. He instilled into us how we should be as men. I think. Yeah, like during my travels, I've thought to myself, like, oh, I need to show this young man, like, my thoughts. Because there's been four different times, whether I was in Sacramento, Idaho, or Missouri. And I've had these young men they're looking for guidance, bro, because they can't find it from their beta dad, which is, dude, it was so sad to me.
Yeah.
And I told him, like, well, this is how my dad showed me how life is. This is what I think we should, how we should treat each other and women. This is how I think you should lead your life. This is how I think I should lead my life. And I told him, like, let's be honest. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I've had my foul ups as younger men. Like, I thought one way, and I realized I'm reverting back to my roots, how I really should be. And I feel more gratification for it. Like, and I've shown, like four different young men, and now they're enormously successful than I am. Like, they're making a lot more money than kids their age should be making, because they're in construction and they are in sales, and I gave them not a plan, but just a guidance. Like, hey, try this. Like, everyone's telling you to go that way. Why don't look at this way? And this is why you need to go this way. And now, dude, they're buying cars, buying houses.
Right.
They're in a serious relationship. And I'm telling them, don't do what I did. Mm-hmm. I didn't listen to my family. I didn't listen to my dad.
When did that strike? When did you shift gears of your mentality?
Do 2020.
2020?
Yeah. Okay. Us living in California, it showed me a lot of what was going on. And it's like, okay, shit hits the fan, right? Like, what do we do? Where do we go?
Yeah.
Like, can we rely on each other? It's like, not a lot of people were. People were killing each other over toilet paper.
Yeah, and water.
And, bro, can you imagine water and food? You know what I mean? Like, and whose back do I have? Who has my back? Like, you hit me up, I'm like, I got you, bro. Here's a box of this. Yeah. Here's this.
Right.
Like, what else do you need? And then when I go to these other states and I tell them these stories, I'm in. You know what I mean? They're like, all right, you're a good one. You're one of us. Like,
no, but I appreciate you coming in, man.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing you more on here.
Yeah, sure. I like your sexy podcast.
That's definitely clipping. Appreciate you, my boy. Gracias.